Well, on the surface, today's lectionary readings should be a softball for any preacher. They all converge around the theme of faith, the faith of Abraham, the Hall of Faith passage in Hebrews 11, Jesus tenderly calling his flock to faith over fear. Faith is like what we're doing here, right? It's the central concept of Christianity. It should be the easiest thing to preach about. But I have to admit, preparing for this sermon was far from easy. The more I tried to grasp the concept of faith, the more it slipped through my fingers. Even Hebrews 11:1, often called the clear definition of faith, is notoriously vague and difficult to translate. The Greek is so sophisticated that many biblical scholars have to admit they don't know the precise meaning of it. And so the more I read and the more I found, the language for faith evolves and changes throughout the scriptures and throughout history. It's like a wet noodle you just can't hold on to. This week felt like a wrestling match trying to pin down this slippery word, faith. And for a word like faith, the stakes are high. I tremble even now talking about such a sacred word, because it's a word that carries the weight of divine authority. Our understanding of faith shapes how we relate to God, ourselves, and the world. And with so much weight behind it, if the word faith is misused, it can be crushing. The late theologian Paul Tillich warns about that. In his book, Dynamics of Faith, he says this: there is hardly a word in the religious language subject to more misunderstandings, distortions, and questionable definitions than the word faith. It belongs to those terms which need healing before they can be used for the healing of men. He says today the term faith is more productive of disease than of health. And sadly, I think he's right, which is also why I struggled. Because I've seen faith produce disease firsthand. I've lived it. A man brings honest, vulnerable questions to his pastor and is told to stop and just have faith. Friends are estranged from family because their faith looks different than the one they grew up with. A man battling mental illness is accused of not having enough faith when he takes his medication. A woman comes forward to call out abuse and to seek justice, but is called faithless and unforgiving. If misunderstood, the word faith can wound, leaving people disillusioned, disoriented, and defeated. And these stories make me think that the problem is not that the concept of faith is slippery, but that we ever think we can grasp it in the first place, that we ever think that it would be easy. Over time, we've tried to shrink it down to fit into our minds, leaving no room for struggle or mystery. And a faith that can fit in our minds is a shadow, a distortion of the real thing. Faith is not simply an intellectual exercise, arranging the right set of beliefs in the right order. Faith is not a rigid certainty that treats questions or doubts as failure. Faith is not a willful avoidance of reality. It's not an excuse to avoid the world's pain or an opiate to numb our own. And faith is certainly not a weapon for religious leaders to demand compliance, protect their power, and evade accountability. These distortions are not the faith we see in the scriptures. Real faith is dynamic. It's life-giving. It doesn't sit still long enough to hold it. It keeps you moving and guessing and seeking. It doesn't want to be understood as much as it wants to be experienced. David Brooks, a columnist for the New York Times, wrote about his journey from agnosticism to faith, and he said something that captures this so well. He says, I've learned that faith is the wrong word for faith as I experience it. Faith implies possession of something, whereas I experience faith as a yearning for something beautiful that I can sense but not fully grasp. Faith is more about longing and thirsting than knowing and possessing. And I love how he puts that. Faith is not a possession, but a yearning, a longing. A possession is static. You either have it or you don't. But longing is alive. Longing moves us. It pulls us forward, whether we know where we're going or not. Faith is not a one-time decision we make at our conversion or our baptism. It's a lifelong journey, which I think is why the author of Hebrews doesn't give us a crystal clear definition of faith. He gives us stories. Faith is too big, too alive to be captured in a neat and tidy sentence. It has to be shown in the lived journeys of real people, people like Abraham. And the faith we see in the life of Abraham is a lot like the faith David Brooks described, a longing and a yearning for something beautiful. By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go to a place he was to receive as an inheritance. He set out, not knowing where he was going. What gets Abraham started on this journey of faith? He's the father of faith, but he has no catechism. He has no certainty. He has no map. He doesn't even have a Bible. What he had was a promise that was compelling enough to get him moving. God came to him and said, I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing, and all the peoples of the earth will be blessed through you. And that's a pretty compelling promise. That's the promise that pulls Abraham out of his comfy bed and onto the dusty road towards Canaan. And we may be tempted to see Abraham's leaving as a selfless, sacrificial act of holiness, right? And maybe it was. Or maybe God put something in front of him that was so attractive, so beautiful that it was worth leaving for. But it wasn't a one-and-done movement of faith. His journey was tumultuous. It was this ongoing push and pull between God's promises and Abraham's very human doubts and wanderings. But again and again, God would step in and remind him of what he was journeying towards. In our Old Testament reading, God comes to him in a vision to remind him of the promise. And Abraham's doubt bubbled up in honesty. Lord, what can you give me? How do I know? And God didn't scold him or wave his finger at him, just have more faith. He took him outside and he pointed to the night sky, telling him to count the stars. So shall your descendants be. And Abraham believed him. He still didn't hold the promise in his hand. But in that moment, God gave him an image, a glimpse, a taste that was enough to renew his longing and keep him walking towards it. Our text reminds us that Abraham lived his whole life without seeing God's promise completely fulfilled. He died still a stranger and a sojourner. That word is hard to say, sojourner. But along the way, he caught glimpses from a distance, and he greeted them. He had intimate encounters with God that kept him wanting more. Those glimpses were like a signpost that kept his eyes fixed on the city that was to come, stirring his longing for a better heavenly country. And Abraham didn't know what the full shape of that better country was, and in a way, neither do we. But we see more of it than Abraham ever could. Look at our gospel passage. Fear not, little flock, for it is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. This is our promise. Like God calling Abram out of his homeland with a promise so delicious he couldn't resist, Jesus calls us out of our homeland with an even better promise. I will give you the kingdom. I will make you citizens of a new creation, and you will be blessed. I will make you a blessing, and through you the world will catch a glimpse of my love. I will bind up the broken, set the captives free, and wipe away every tear. All the nations of the earth will be drawn to my feast table, and in you, my little flock, the world will taste and see my goodness. This is a promise that can get us out of bed. This is the promise that's meant to get us up and moving onto the dusty road toward the kingdom. And like Abraham, that journey won't be a straight shot. It's never expected to be. Jesus knows we will wrestle with doubts and discouragement. He knows the danger that our hearts will grow dull as we wait, that we'll settle for smaller treasures we can see and touch right now, instead of keeping our longing fixed on the better country he's promised. So he gives us instructions on how to keep our hearts hungry for the kingdom. Sell your possessions and give alms. And it might sound like Jesus is saying we must be poor to enter the kingdom, or that all wealth is bad. But through the lens of faith as longing, we can see these words differently, because he's giving us a practice that can keep our hearts yearning for the kingdom. A full belly will never long for food as much as you will it, but a hungry belly will growl and ache until you get up and look for food to fill it. Jesus knows that the more tightly we grip our possessions, the more they grip us in return, and the more satisfied we feel with the world as it is. When you loosen your grip, create space to hunger for something better, the heavenly kingdom. Augustine said, the whole life of the good Christian is a holy longing. That is our life, to be trained by longing. Jesus said it more simply, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. God has set eternity in the hearts of humans. So at the very core of every human is the longing for something beautiful and transcendent. And it's that longing that we need to tap into and follow. The more we long for the kingdom, the more we will watch and listen for it. Jesus follows up his words about the treasure of our hearts with a parable that urges us to stay alert and watchful. Because the more we watch and listen for the kingdom, the more we catch glimpses of it, little foretastes that keep our hope alive and our feet moving. The more we have these encounters with God that fan our love and devotion to him. Now, I don't mean all of this to say that belief or intellect is the enemy. It's good to think deeply and wrestle with the truths of our faith. And there's an important place for doctrine and the shaping of our hearts, but belief alone is not what gets us out of bed and onto the road. Belief alone will not sustain us when the facts on the ground don't seem to match up to the promises of God. Only yearning and longing can do that. A few weeks ago, I was sitting with a group of friends talking about faith and our various struggles with it. And one friend was sharing how the current political landscape and her own personal hardships and a growing disillusionment with the church had all shaken the sense of confidence that she once had. But she still comes to church. She still listens to the words, sings the songs, receives the body and blood, because something in her longs for something beautiful and transcendent. And she said something that perfectly describes the journey of faith. She said, "Sometimes, not all the time, sometimes I'll hear something and I'll think that's what the kingdom sounds like. And it's beautiful. And it's enough to bring me back again." We need this kind of faith. Faith that moves us with beauty. Faith that sustains us when we don't know where we are going. Maybe we need to stop asking what or how much do I believe, but what do I most long for? Maybe you don't feel as sure as you once did, but you long for justice and mercy. Maybe you struggle to make sense of all this God talk, but your heart aches for a world where love and life triumph over evil and death. Maybe you don't know if you even belong in a church anymore, but you still hunger for something beautiful, something meaningful. These longings are faith. They may be faint and fleeting, but a faintly burning wick he will not quench. Let those longings for something holy move you forward. Let them carry you, keep you walking toward the coming kingdom, keep you loving and watching and finding beauty on the way. I still don't know the fullness of what faith means. I hope I'll spend my whole life discovering it. But I know how much I long for the day when God, who planted these longings in our hearts, will one day bring them to full and glorious completion. And that's enough for today. And it's enough to bring me back. Oh God, grant us that we may desire you, and desiring you, seek you, and seeking you, find you, and finding you, be satisfied in you forever. Amen.